everyone, and welcome back to the Research VR podcast, the podcast behind the science and design of virtual reality. I am your host, Oz Balabanian, and with me today is special guest, Alex Harvey. Hello, Alex.
Hello, nice to meet you.
And of course, beaming in from Germany is Mr. Peter Leckoff.
Hello, everyone.
So today we have Alex Harvey, who is the creative director of River, which is a UK-based company. And we're going to be talking a lot about firefighting and photogrammetry. So these are two interesting topics. And perhaps, Alex, you'll give us a little bit more of a background as well. So tell us a little bit about how you found yourself kind of within the space, how you found yourself in VR, and what attracted you to it, and kind of, I guess, how it led to you guys forming River.
Yeah, cool. So the basis about the formation of River was it came out of another company that I'd made after leaving the games industry. So I used to work at Codemasters making racing games for those guys. So I was doing the...
like the grid. Yeah.
F1.
Yes. It's a good game.
All the race games, but I was mainly in the video edit department. So we would make the trailers for the TV ads and stuff like that. And that's where it started. And I was there for 8 years, loved it. And then we started flying drones in the video production department as well. So that got into the sort of aerial cinematography side of things. And then in 2014, I left Codemasters. It was the best job I've ever had, but I really wanted to go and sort of do my own thing. So in the end, we started a company called Infinite Pixel, which is still going now. And we're in the same building now. We share the same space. So Infinite Pixel is a production company. And we started by doing drone work for touring cars, BBC, ITV, a lot of trailers for different people. And then we started getting into 360 video. So we did a Ford Motorsport 360 video at Donington Park. That was our biggest sort of 360 piece with Samsung and Ford. And after that, we started looking at VR a lot more. And that's about the time that River started. I have to say that the first stuff that got me into VR was when we first tried, have you tried realities.io?
Oh, yes. They've been a guest on our podcast, and I think we'll be on soon as well, once more.
Amazing. So that was the basis of the sort of inspiration behind the company, because I loved everything that they did.
Oh, hell yeah.
It was the best feeling. It was almost from the video world coming into that. It just felt so good that I was almost inside a video with all the photogrammetry. And I was amazed by it. I used to, you know, the scenes, their early ones, I was like, would crawl around the floor just checking how, what the textures were like and stuff.
Cool.
So loved that. And that's what that's how we started getting into the fire service, by showing them those sort of things just before they did a proof of concept with us.
What was that? I guess, why did you even, where did the fire department become a part of this thinking process, right? Like, I don't think that's that's a natural leap to make.
Yeah. So there's a show every year near where we live in Birmingham, and it's called the Emergency Services Show, and it's on every year. But I went there, I think it was about 3 years ago now, and met a guy called Paul Spate, and he's a watch manager, watch commander for the fire service in the UK. And he was showing his 360 video. So he had four firefighters there with four Samsung Gear VRs, and they were all they were showing a car crash film in 360 video. So he was very much ahead of his time. It was like 3 years ago, and he'd already produced the 360 film. So anyway, I got into the fire service because I met him there, and we gave him the software to sync all the four headsets together. So when I met him, that was our connection, the first time we met the fire service. And it was literally meeting him and talking through his training with him that made the connection between sort of realities, photogrammetry stuff, and the fire service and their training scenarios that I could just see was a really nice fit.
Mm. Cool.
But it was fire service first, and then And then now we're on to the police force as well.
That's fascinating. So I guess how photogrammetry is still a very niche and hard. And I mean, even people that are very interested in it, perhaps sometimes give up on it when they realize the limitations of the technology. I guess what's been your experience with using this kind of new volumetric format, and where do you see the main advantages coming in? And perhaps maybe you can describe the firefighting demo that you guys created, kind of with the environment and scanning the tools, and just so for listeners to kind of get a visual understanding of what you guys actually built.
Yeah, we started off, the first thing we built was we call it the Cora Suite. It was a burnt out environment in Leicester that we went and we did BLK laser scan inside it, so the Leica laser scanner.
Yes.
We didn't actually end up using that scan data because the photogrammetry was good enough for this. It was just the proof of concept. So in this proof of concept, we gave them a set of tools, all scanned photogrammetry, and we scanned a fire truck, stuck it in the alleyway, also a dead body on the floor, which wasn't really dead.
Just a very still person.
Yes. Put it all together in this sort of concept piece. And that ended up getting shown at every single show that they did for the next sort of 2 years. And it's still being shown now as just a photogrammetry demo piece that they use. So that was the first piece we did. But it's been a very long time to get actually going with the project. You know, the proof of concept then had to go through lots of different departments to be able to get sign-off, to be able to get funding. And we're only now at the point where we're working on a final piece for them. It's actually the first scenario that they've commissioned. We're creating that now. So the fire service has been a very slow journey, which is why we've had to do other things at the same time as doing the fire project. But the fire project is now six scenarios have been commissioned, and we're currently on the first one. And we're showing a beta version of it next week at the emergency services show in the UK. And they're going to continue to have these photogrammetry scenes. I think there's probably some questions that I've missed off from the start of your questions just then. I went straight into what we built.
No, totally fine.
We also flew drones up and down this alleyway. So we used photogrammetry from drones. Me and my brother both did our drone pilot's license about 3 years ago. So that was a skill that came in handy. But yeah, that's the first scenario we made for the fire service.
So how do firefighters actually end up using this? This is a training simulation for them?
Yeah. So the one that we're creating right now is called the Level 1 Fire Investigation Training. So in that scenario, in the real world, they fit out a container, and they make the container, a metal container, they make it look exactly like someone's front room. And then they stage a fire in that front room so that the fire starts in a specific location from a specific fire source, like maybe a fuse plug that's got too hot and set on fire. So we created that in the real world with the fire service, and then we burnt the whole room. They do that in real life now. But what they do in real life is they're not allowed to touch the items in the room. They're not allowed to move things out of the way to find where the fire started until it's the last group of the day. So 80 people go through in one day, and the last group are allowed to move the things out and find out how the fire started. All the others are not allowed to touch stuff. So that just seemed like a perfect way to make a really good photogrammetry room scale scene, because you can press a button and reset the whole scene. So with this first scenario, it's instantly a cost saver, because they haven't got to do this real world task so many times anymore. And every single firefighter can go in and do their own training based on this one scenario.
And how would they move the objects? Because from what I understand, when you just scan an environment, you have a very nice mesh. But then you still need, at least manually, to separate it into six segments, right?
It's a great question, yeah. That is that is the problem, or that was the problem. So that was the thing that we had to get around. The whole room has 70 items in. So we had to burn the whole room, and then we put the new Leica laser scanner in, the RTC 360.
Ooh.
The one that is really expensive and costs over 300,000, yeah. Right?
I'm not sure of the cost, but I don't think it's that much. Leica are now a very good partner of ours, so we get access to their sort of their new stuff quite quickly. But it's an amazing scanner, and the guy that came along was Steve Ramsey. He's an awesome laser scanner. He scanned the whole burn straight after it happened, and then Ross Evans, who's also another director at River, created with some of the other guys a mobile photogrammetry rig that we took with us to the site, and we scanned every single item individually from every angle from the site. So we moved every item very slowly from the burnt container to the scan site. And now when we go into VR, the room is exactly as it was just after it finished burning. And you can pick up an item off the table and then see the smoke-free area on the desk. So you can properly examine each object. Also, as you're picking the objects up and examining them, you can either disregard it and it can just get put away, or you can add it to the evidence room to view at a later date. So we've got an evidence room that's sort of, if you like, sort of behind the container. It's like a mobile lab type thing where you can blow things up and spin things around and see where the smoke pattern came from on each object. And when you're in that room as well, if this is another thing the guys added, Ben Hermer, another director at River, CTO, he's created a camera. So we scanned a full Canon 5D in VR. And now you are, when you're doing the crime scene or the fire investigation, you can take photos of the photogrammetry scene in VR, and then the photos go and get stored on a wall in the lab. So when you get back into the lab, you've got your photos, and you've also got all of your evidence that you've bagged or decided to move into there. So we're developing the technology, like the camera will be used in every other scenario. But as we go through the development of it, we develop in some really cool things along the way that will get used in all the other scenes.
Totally fascinating. And like you...
Good question, though, about the...
Right. I was actually thinking the same thing. All right, so that base layer that you're laser scanning is kind of is the room without these objects initially, and then you then virtually are placing these scanned objects for people to sift through?
Well, actually, you start in the room as it's been burnt. So your first scene in the room would be a complete burnt, charred room. And after that, you then have to move things out the way to see where the fire came from. And the end goal, if you want to get to it, is you strip every single item out of the room and you can see the container in its bare form with the smoke patterns on the wall leading exactly to where the fire started from a plug in the corner. So yeah, it's almost that. It's like backwards of that. And then also at the end of it, we filmed it in 360 video. So at the end of your room scale experience in sort of this photorealistic world, you can then press a button and you can sit. Make sure you sit down for it, but then watch the 360 video play around you as well. So you can watch it in reverse and see where the fire started.
Mm.
So you see the room in flames and then it all goes back down to where it came from. And then that's your sort of your learning outcome at the end. To make sure that, you know, did it start from where you thought it started?
Right. That's the kind of the ground truth that you can compare your investigation to.
Yeah, if you got it right or not.
Right. Cool. And you, I think you mentioned earlier that you're working now with the police department as well. What sort of scenarios do you see being applicable to their training? Because...
Yeah, so we've actually created that one. That's a project that's actually finished. It was running in parallel with the fire service project, but that's now finished and we're on to the second stage of the fire, of the police scenarios now. But that they asked for, because I tend to say to the people after they've had a demo, like, what do you want it to be? What's your training needs now? So the the police guys said to us, this is the Home Office in the UK. They said, could we have a, and it's, a, I won't go into all the details, but I can brush over it. It's a crime scene investigation. So they had two, they wanted to have a two-bedroom flat where you're the first responder that turns up to this two-bedroom flat. You get to knock on the door, open the door, walk around the flat, make the flat secure. They want to train people on what they would do in a situation like that. So you've got to make the flat secure, check each room. There's certain hazards in different rooms that they want you to eliminate before you continue your search. So there was, it's a bit of a side note, but as in that scenario, it's a room scale, amazingly photorealistic, you know, room scale flat. And we also added outside of the windows, 360 video.
Yeah, cool.
So as you can walk around the flat and you look out the window and you see real cars going past and there's a police car outside and pedestrians walking up and down. So it just sort of roots you in a bit more. But that's, we've found from a research type point of view that that is very, if you don't mention it to people, they normally won't notice it because it seems so normal until you explain to someone what it is. Because obviously we couldn't have yet photogrammetry models walking up and down the street outside.
Yeah, so volumetric video is hard. Yeah.
Yeah, but we're going on that path. So currently we're just looking at we've done a few firefighters in photogrammetry, and we're looking at rigging those firefighters and just motion capturing them to do the things we want in scene. I actually think it's like a bit of a, I was at CES this year and we looked at the, I saw the Intel keynote where they talk about their volumetric video. And I just think that that is going to be a thing for films, but I think for training and things that you want to be fluid, I don't think that volumetric video is going to be the way forward, because you're, if you record someone talking to you, then if the person goes over there, all you can do is sort of pan the head round. And I want the, it's almost, it feels like the characters need to be full AI with full rigged bodies so that you can interact with them, you know, basic level stuff maybe first.
Just to make eye contact even, I think, which is, I think that's one of the biggest things.
Yeah, just idle motions and stuff. I feel like that will be a more beneficial thing for VR than volumetric video. I think volumetric video is very much a, it's almost a voyeuristic thing. You're going to be looking in on a scene.
Yeah. So the approach that you described, scanning a firefighter and putting some kind of skeleton to it and animate it, the problems that I would see is, in a sense, uncanny valley. So when you would have someone which is a cartoon looking like firefighter, it's easier to believe in his goofy movements than when you have someone who is like looking super realistic. But it's just in my head very hard to actually animate a virtual scan of a human to, you know, looking like, you know, good enough so we don't have the uncanny valley effect. I mean, you might have an advantage that the firefighter has some kind of crazy equipment on him and he doesn't look that much human at all, but is it something that you have, you know, considered or just want to try it out?
No. Yeah, well, we've been doing it. We've been doing it with idle motion photogrammetry firefighters, only with an idle motion. And we've got his, you know, his facial, his face isn't moving. He's very much facially static at the moment, but his body is idle and moving. And we do a lot of, I want to know what it feels like. So I want to get into VR soon as possible and find out whether that there is that problem. And at the moment, for me, when I'm next to him in VR, the body movements are good because they're from a mocap suit. They feel good. But the facial stuff, we haven't gone down talking yet. That will be the next thing. But I do think that the body capture mocap stuff is looking great. I don't even know the name of it, but it's the guys have it in the office, so we can capture our own mocap stuff. in the studio.
Cool, cool. Is it a perhaps a wireless system, or is it a camera-based kind of Vicon?
No, it's more like a wireless thing. We're very close to a place down the road called Silicon Spa, where Codemasters is based. And off of Codemasters, there's been about sort of 20 games companies all sprung up in the same area. So we get to, you know, talk to and speak to these guys quite a lot. And the amount of kit and knowledge that we can all sort of share between us has been great.
That's cool. That's very cool. I was going to mention perhaps with the firefighter, maybe since they're already suited up, like having the mask be a part of the head instead of the face might just solve, or perhaps is like a good stepping stone than having to do the full facial mocap.
The more you can cover up, the better.
Yep. And good thing that the firefighter is covered from head to toe. So
yeah, yeah. You can see the firefighter on the YouTube channel, just not the moving one yet.
I guess coming back to the value add that you guys are doing or have with Photogrammage is the fact that these training scenarios that firefighters already use, you said, first of all, are limited to that last group that can actually manipulate where objects are. And even though this is not even a real house or a real flat that it's burned, you know, this is a train simulation or just a simulation area. It costs a lot of money to do these things, and you can repeat it time and time again. And you're finding the most value from being able to for people to be able to manipulate objects or manipulate the things in the room, investigate that way. Are there other scenarios perhaps that you can see a big benefit coming from being able to do in VR? Perhaps maybe, you know, training the muscle memory training for like actually using a fire truck or the other maneuvers. Like what do you really see? Where do you see the value add coming from?
Yeah, so there is a list at the moment of we're at the stage where the NFCC are choosing the scenarios that they want us to create for them. So there is a list of about five. Off the top of my head, there's some of them that they want to do exposure training to are things like road traffic collisions. So when there's been a major crash, they want to recreate a whole road and have a crashed car with injuries in that you can go up and like do the first responder stuff to those people. So that's one of the scenarios. Also hot fire training. So they train in the big containers, but they have to follow each other around and tap each other on the shoulders and do certain things with their feet to make sure that they're looking for floor that's not safe to stand on.
Oh, interesting.
So okay. We're thinking about Vive trackers on feet and, you know, making sure that people are doing that sort of maneuver.
Ooh.
And then also, front investigation stuff that we did was the first scenes that we made. And they were very sort of passive. We thought that they were the best ones to start with. Because as long as it's passive, then we can do less of the moving around.
Cool. Yeah, this is, it seems like there's still so much to explore and to figure out, especially on, you know, that sort of an enterprise application is the training. I mean, I think we keep coming back to this conversation on this podcast is training, and VR is just unlocking so many potentials there. Mm-hmm. Are there any other people that are doing this sort of work, or are you really having to kind of blaze your own trail here?
Trailblazing, is that the right term?
we definitely see other people doing fire training, but I haven't seen anyone yet doing photorealistic fire training. So we met some of the guys from Flame. You might have met those or heard about those guys. They've got a hose with a Vive tracker on the front and you can squirt water, but it's very much a cartoon-ish scenario that you're in. I had a go on it, went out for drinks with those guys. They're amazing. And we'd like to do something together. We're going to meet up again in Indianapolis FDIC 2019. And there's talk of us creating some scenarios to use their hardware in.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. I was probably going to ask if you've already tried it.
Yeah, I tried it. It was great.
The question is also maybe where do you see, you know, future technology improving your training applications, maybe something like a Tesla suited, you know, allows you to actually feel heat and cold and pressure, or pressure would actually touch, or maybe more eye tracking, you know, by analyzing where the people look, you know, giving them later a report, you know, you looked for the wrong cues or whatever.
Yeah, we've got a system actually that attaches into our training scenarios called VRM. So it's a virtual reality monitor. And it's basically, it's like having a tablet that you can interact with and see into that virtual scene. So within that tablet, you can trigger things to happen within the virtual scenario, but it's also recording the whole thing. But it's not just recording the whole thing for you to look back at a 2D screen. It is on a 2D screen, but it's recording the whole thing. But then you can go back to any place in the training and view any bit of the training from any angle. So it's a bit like a bullet time, because it's all just like a unity world that we can manipulate. So there is that recording of their movements and stuff that I think are going to be really beneficial. And eye tracking will help that. Eye tracking will help that. We were next to Tesla's suit on the Department of International Trade stand at CES this year. And, you know, I didn't have a go on the suit, but I spoke to the guys about it, and the fire brigade have been speaking to them. And we're very much open to have those discussions with people like Flame, like Tesla suit. And we're now doing stuff with Intel and Leica. And I think because we seem to have created this sort of a bit of a niche in the fire world and the police world and this photogrammetry type training, that we're very keen for people to come and join us, and, you know, let's make it as good as we can. So yeah, I'd love to give it a go.
Yeah, and when you would look at the development of your your service through the last years and with your experiences working with, you know, government agencies, what was like the biggest the biggest difficulties you had? Because I assume things, you know, as you mentioned, are slower than you expected, you know, budgets, whatever. Like, how hard is it to enter such a, well, kind of very, maybe even obvious, I mean, you need to train people, but kind of also very tricky with a lot of, you know, underwater stones that you can, you know, hit yourself on market?
Yeah, there's so, we joke about it because it's been so slow with the fire service. It is definitely not something that you can just walk into and just show them something and they'll buy it. It has been such a long process, like over 2 years, but now we are at that point. So it has been like 2 years. And with the Home Office, it was maybe a little bit quicker, maybe a year for them to have their first sort of scene. But we're 2 years into the fire service and we are just creating their first proper training scenario. What we did do 6 months ago was create them a 360 video driver training platform, just to sort of, you know, to show them what they could have to help with their driver training while we were continuing discussions to talk about the VR scenarios. Because it was a big discussion, we wanted to do it from the NFCC, which is the top government type structure that feeds down to all the fire services, so that it's not too confusing for them all to be going out and doing their own thing and doing their own VR projects, which a lot of them have been. We wanted to make sure that it was more of a top-down thing, and it's now going to be a new work stream within the UK. So they're going to have a new virtual reality work stream that it'll be a blended learning approach. So it won't all be VR, but it'll be bits of VR like you have e-learning.
Right. No, that's pretty amazing that you guys are really trying to integrate this as part of the natural firefighting training that's going to be applied perhaps across all of the UK.
Yeah, it's that.
Rather than a one-off. Yeah.
It's the ability to put people in dangerous situations from day one. So there's no safety hazards. You just put people in these dangerous situations straight away.
To veer off kind of what we're talking about, do you see augmented reality being a pretty big tool for perhaps in these sectors as well? And if so, how?
Yeah, when we were at FDIC this year, we did some talks there with some guys. I don't know if you've heard of the guys from Quake Technologies. They've got an augmented reality sort of piece that sits inside a firefighter's mask, and it allows them to see through smoke. You just see the outline of every object. as you walk around the space in a pitch black smoky room. It's amazing.
So I guess it uses some kind of sonar or whatever, right?
Or a LiDAR based.
I think it's
system.
not LiDAR. I think it's some IR stuff. I guess
some sonar or whatever, because LiDAR would be blocked by the smoke. I think you.
Thermal.
Okay.
Someone's just telling me. Someone's just telling me in the room. Actually, yeah.
How would that make sense, though? I mean, if you're in a fiery room, isn't thermal probably the worst way of trying to see past the fire?
Yeah, I have to say, I don't know actually what it is. I only had a go on it and saw the video. So as I'm looking around this room, if this room's full of smoke, the tables and every edge, it's like, that's what it is, edge detection.
Oh, okay.
So every edge is like a green, dark green line. So I don't know how they do it.
You know, I it makes me actually think, perhaps I was wrong about that comment, is if you're in a smoky room, then there's probably not big fires that you're walking through, but the wood, all the surfaces are probably still hot. So you can see the surfaces with a thermal camera rather than seeing the fire. I think that's probably what it is. But
yeah, it was very cool.
That's fascinating.
Very cool. And those guys are, it's not what you'd call your average AR stuff because it's inside a mask. I do see AR helping, you know, a lot of these people as well. We just haven't really done much with it. We can put our models, our photorealistic models, into AR applications and see them in AR. Like we can see our fire truck in AR, and we can pull out bits where the hose is, or we can point out where this thing should be kept. But we just haven't. We've been so busy with all these other VR room scale things that AR has definitely taken a massive backseat.
Well, plus the hardware, there's the problem
not much
with that
to play,
too.
Not much to use it.
What's about regular users? Because honestly, when looking at, you know, the difficulties you have to, you know, scale it up inside a government agency, I mean, it's a very promising business. But I mean, I've been in some fire training some fire defeat training or whatever, because, you know, the university building I've been working on was having some security issues, and I think a lot of people undergo regular training for, you know, what to do when there is fire and stuff. I guess that's also a kind of very lucrative market, right?
Yeah, we've had multiple discussions with different people. A lot of big supermarkets and big sort of warehouse buildings want us to come in with the 360 camera and show or travel the route that the fire escape is. And then play it back. They have that then to play back to their employees in VR, so they can show people the exits. But I know what you mean. AR for that application would be amazing. I just feel that AI is waiting for that. You know, it needs to be in your glasses. I don't have a major excitement for holding my phone up and seeing AR stuff. I'm much more excited about putting glasses on and seeing AR. Like Magic Leap stuff, but I haven't tried that yet.
Yeah, perhaps soon. I want to ask, going back to photogrammetry, again, it's not an easy thing to do. So was that kind of a learning process that you guys had to go through and experiment and see what works, what doesn't? And honestly, thinking about inside of a metal container, I can see it turning out really well or turning out very terribly based on just the you know, reflective nature of metal. How did you kind of deal with what kind of challenges came across when you were doing photogrammetry and how did you overcome them?
Well, nobody likes reflective surfaces, and you know, the guys in the office can probably hear me talking now, and Ross is the main guy that's been doing the photogrammetry stuff, and someone asked him the other day to photogrammetry a pot of ball bearings. He wasn't overly pleased with scanning that. But the inside of the container that was a metal container was actually fitted out with plasterboard, curtains, paint. So the whole thing was made like a room, which looked fine in the end. Mm. But there has been multiple years of photogrammetry testing. Like, I come back in the office and I see Ross has got out a load of talcum powder and some matte spray. And he's been trying to like put talcum powder on metal balls and stuff like that. So, you know, and I think Ross has, and with the other guys, come up with some very unique ways that we probably won't be publicizing too much just yet. You know, because it is really hard. But there is some some work around things that we've been looking at with Leica, and they've been teaching us a lot. We've been teaching them a lot. We've got some really cool processes at the moment, which are allowing it's allowing us to expand into different areas.
And what software stack are you using?
So Ross, I suppose we can give that away. It's fine. We spoke about it before. A lot of people do use the same stuff, but just Reality Capture for all the main photogrammetry stuff. Maya, ZBrush, Unity. That's pretty much it.
That's pretty much industry standard, I think, at this point. I use Reality Capture in Unity, and Realities IO also uses Reality Capture. But you're right. Even over the past 2 years, the photogrammetry software itself has been updating, and certain parts of the workflow changes. And so, yeah, I can only imagine kind of where you start to where you are after 2 years of spending every day trying to figure out how to tackle these problems.
It helps with laser data. Laser data does definitely help, especially the stuff from the RTC is so much better than the BLK.
Oh, when I went on this Mars Desert Research Station trip, thank you. And to our listeners, it's not publicly released yet, but when it is, it actually will be fully open sourced for people to like pull everything from the image, like my whole data set, and they can do the reconstruction themselves or just the 3D models and play with that or the full Unity project. So that'll be a fun thing for everyone to try. But the BLK, so that was my first time with the BLK out in the field. And, I wasn't sure if everything was going to work the way I thought it would. So I ended up still relying on full photogrammetry for everything in case the BLK totally failed. And now I'm kind of going between combining the BLK and the photogrammetry or just using the photogrammetry for some rooms. Sometimes it's better, sometimes it's worse. But I think, for probably it's the most entry level LiDAR system. And it's decent in certain applications, but not for every application.
Yes, definitely. It's good in very close proximity areas, like the ones I had a look at that you created. Perfect for those locations, I should imagine, because it's quite a small, tight room.
Yeah, even then, I should mention, I mean, I was able to get less noise with just my photogrammetry data than using LiDAR plus photogrammetry. So so for most of the rooms, I ended up just using photogrammetry. And for certain rooms, it was good to have it.
I think that's where we were until we started using RTC. And I think you'll see the same thing, that the data quality is really cool, like really good.
Yeah, we should get Leica as a sponsor on this podcast. Yeah. This, you know, be cool.
I mean, if you have a contact, you know, just toss it over. We would actually also like to have some, I guess, as a guest, because I've seen one of the backpacks. We should. Like, there's this weird backpack scanner, which is also super expensive, but like super interesting. You have some kind of 360 plus LiDAR.
It's called the Pegasus backpack. We've been out and used that. It's really cool. Mobile backpack scanning. We walked around a big medieval building in the UK and just scanned the whole thing. He did it in about 2 hours, just walking around. And then we've got a whole recreation. But yes, I can put you in touch with them, and I know some people that would definitely come and have a chat.
Yeah, it would be amazing.
And one more question about the LiDAR scanner. Was it that unit that does the, as you're moving it throughout the room, it's doing the pre-registration? So just for our listeners, this unit kind of has an inside-out tracking system that does SLAM to know where the LiDAR unit is being placed, and then it does this pre-registration so that it, rather than having to do, rather than having to do like feature detection in post, it's a pretty cool unit. It blew my mind when I saw the video.
He pressed the button on the side, and it scanned for 2 minutes. This guy's called Steve. You should get him on. And then it finished. Mm. He picked it up, he moved it, he put it down, press go. And that was it. He just kept doing that. And it knows its position from there to there. It scanned the whole room. It's got a bit of, a bit like videogrammetry stuff, like SLAM stuff. Mm. Yeah. to know where it's been.
It's actually quite surprising.
Yeah, it makes sense because that is one of the bigger problems with like LiDAR is you have to kind of have line of sight between the first scan to the second scan. You can't just put it behind, you know, a wall and expect for the LiDAR units to know exactly where each scans were done from. So again, these technologies being developed in the different verticals, but converge because of similar technologies. It's so cool to see, like SLAM coming from drones to VR headsets to LiDAR units. It's a cool chain.
Yeah, cool.
I mean, there seems to be like a huge need for any kind of technology to understand where it is, which is like, I don't know, it seems like such a trivial thing because we humans are super good at understanding where we are, but I mean, even, you know, looking at those super expensive products like the Leica scanner, I mean, they took them, you know, a few years to figure out the SLAM algorithms, whatever. It seems like to be a really challenging thing to make sure that, you know, technology understands where it is, how it moves. And I'm really happy people are addressing it because it's so much needed for everything, literally everything.
I think that it makes it much more accessible for people. So, you know, it's just getting easier and easier to scan these environments. Because it's not, you don't have to be someone that has been doing SLAM and laser scanning for years and years. You can literally pick these things up now because they're just making it easier.
But is it a challenge for you? Is it a danger that you see that, you know, at some point, you know, the firefighters could scan it themselves? Or do you see your IP rather in the scanning plus integrating in such a complex and difficult vertical?
So that's another thing that has got me just to think about, I'll just briefly talk about it, but with Leica, we're discussing a system where the River system could ingest just point cloud data from laser scanners because I would like the fire service and the police force to be able to have their own scanners. I would like them to scan their own crime scenes because I would like them to then use that point cloud data in VR. The best way to view point cloud data is in VR. I've had a go, but it's a bit clunky. But I would like them all to be using our system to bring this data in. And then if they wanted us to create a interactive scenario from that data, then they could, but we'd have to have access to the scene to do the photogrammetry. So we've met with Leica and I've discussed this thing with them. And there's a lot of legal things in the way that stop them from doing it. So it might make sense that we in the future can be taking in point cloud data into our system. It's been spoke about, but it's great. Good idea. We're definitely thinking about the same sort of things.
And you can even imagine for this to go beyond training and like you said, having firefighters be able to scan the real sites and even perhaps as they're putting out the fire to be able to have someone offsite being able to, you know, go through the point cloud data and perhaps, I don't know, find certain things that you just couldn't find when you were there.
I mean, the insurance companies, you know, they're coming by and figuring out, should we pay your money or not because your house burned down? I guess they would be also very interested in not just having, you know, their consultant doing photos with an iPhone, but actually, you know, let's actually scan it. And then we have an expert for rare cases exploring it.
Yes. We've offered another service to the fire service, which is photogrammetry models done by a drone. So we turn up to a site, we launch the drone, and for 5-10 minute flight, we collect about 300 images ish, and then feed them into obviously the same software that we're using for everything else, and send them back a model for their control center to have within an hour of being there. And it's not a super accurate model, but it gives them the basis of the scenario, as long as it's in daytime.
And this is right. And this would be for like a house that is like recently burnt, or like what would they? Yeah, how would they use this like photogrammetry aerial data?
Right now, they've been currently doing it for their fire stations. So just as a record of their fire stations, we've been going to the fire stations and flying the drone and getting models of all their stations. But as we're doing this, they're now seeing that they could be used for road traffic collisions and any number of other events. So I really like showing these services, showing the blue light services, these sort of really quite high-end tech solutions to problems. They always seem to be very far behind when it comes to the technology. So it's an easy industry to go and innovate in.
Yeah, but it's also a hard industry because the reason why they are so much behind is not as much people would suspect, you know, them not being capable, but, you know, the processes and stuff. I mean, even big corporates have really hard times, you know, applying new technology, even though they should be, you know, the first ones. And when you speak about, you know, government office, in every country so far, you see basically the same trend. It's super hard to use new technology because it involves laws, it involves, you know, certification, whatever. And I mean, on the other hand, I could also argue that what you're doing is like very good for the best for the people around you. Like, because if you train firefighters, you know, to fight better fires or, you know, to understand things, you're also, you know, providing a service to, you know, basically every citizen by, you know, forcing this new technology that was helping to the people they actually wanted, but they need someone like you who is like the ambassador.
Definitely, yeah. It definitely needs someone to bring it and show. And, you know, we've done, like you guys, I bet you've done multiple VR demos to people. We've done literally hundreds of shows. And that's one of the main things that I say to people when they say, how have you got to where we are now? And it is hundreds of shows, hundreds of hours standing up, putting a headset on people, putting another headset on people, talking about it for hours to people. I think the only people that will succeed are people like yourselves and us that are so passionate about it. And we see it being so beneficial. Like I've quit, you know, doing most things, and everything is now based around VR. It's just everything can be. We talk about the fire service and police force. I've probably got 3-4 other industries that we're now creating photorealistic scenes for. Not just those guys now. It's got really busy.
Dude, that's fantastic. And I hope you guys can perhaps figure out a way to scale some of this, the processing, and be able to take on more environments and more situations, because these things add up very, very, very quickly, and it requires lots of handwork to do.
Yes. Yeah.
Alex, how can people find you or contact you, and how can people find out more about River?
Yeah, cool. So the website is being redone as we speak. I think it's going to be launched in a couple of weeks, which will be rivr.uk, and that's on the web. And then the best thing to see videos is YouTube, same again, River on YouTube. And then the same again for Instagram and Twitter, it's all River. And then I do quite a few personal bits just on Alex Tench on Instagram and Twitter.
Cool. Yeah, and you can find us at ResearchVRcast on Twitter. And you can find us on Discord as well. And please, if you like listening to this podcast and like listening to these wonderful conversations, consider supporting us on Patreon. And you can find the links for all of these down below. You can support us for as little as $2 a month, which is literally half of a cup of coffee in San Francisco. So if you can buy that, that would be incredible. At least I need coffee before we do any of these podcasts. So. Yeah, the more coffee you can buy me, the more interesting the conversations will get.
Definitely.
And Peter, what else am I forgetting here?
Well, as usual, you know, you can always support us by, first of all, sharing the episodes. That way you will support our guests, because usually the guests are people that need more traction anyway, because they're doing some amazing work, whether in science, industry, or whatever. Then by sharing us, you can also ensure that other people will listen to us. And if you are not able to buy us a cup of coffee, I've been there, I've been a student, you know, just find someone who will pay us a cup of coffee, and that way you helped us double. And 5-star reviews on iTunes, join the Discord, talk to us, talk to our guests, spread the word, and show VR to more as much people as you can.
More demos.
Agreed. Alex, you're invited to join our Discord community as well, which is where we have a lot of our post-episode discussions or pre-episode discussions, and guests typically come on and, connect with other guests and listeners. And we're very happy with the community that we've been able to grow of all these developers and academics and researchers that are, I think everyone is in there in good faith and wants to really explore kind of like the interesting superhuman / enterprise applications of VR, which is our bread and butter. So, thank you again for joining us.
Super exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll see you all next time.
Goodbye.
See you later.